Next up is the audiobook review. Evelyn Waugh, born October 28, 1903, was an English writer regarded by many as the most brilliant satirical novelist of his day. Waugh was educated at Lancing College, Sussex, and at Hertford College, Oxford. After short periods as an art student and a schoolmaster, he devoted himself to solitary observant travel and to the writing of novels, soon earning a wide reputation for sardonic wit and technical brilliance. During World War II, he served in the Royal Marines and the Royal Horse Guards. In 1944, he joined the British military mission to the Yugoslav Partisans. After the war, he led a retired life in the west of England. Waugh's novels, although the material is nearly always derived from first-hand experience, are unusually highly wrought and precisely written. Those written before 1939 may be described as satirical. The most noteworthy are Decline and Fall, 1928, Vile Bodies, 1930, Black Mischief, 1932, A Handful of Dust, 1934, and Scoop, 1938. A later work in that vein is The Love One, 1948, a satire on the mortician's industry in California. During the Second World War, Evelyn Waugh's writing took a more serious and ambitious turn. In Brideshead Revisited, 1945, he studied the workings of Providence and the recovery of faith among the members of a Roman Catholic landed family. Waugh was received into the Roman Catholic Church in 1930. Helena, published in 1950, is a novel about the mother of Constantine the Great, in which Waugh recreated one moment in Christian history to assert a particular theological point. In a trilogy, Men at Arms, 1952, Officers and Gentlemen, 1955, and Unconditional Surrender, 1961, he analysed the character of World War II, in particular its relationship with the eternal struggle between good and evil, and the temporal struggle between civilization and barbarism. And he wrote about the lives of Dante Gabriel Rossetti in 1928, Edmund Campion in 1935, and Ronald Knox in 1959. The first part of an autobiography, A Little Learning, 1964, The Diaries of Evelyn Waugh, edited by Michael Davey and first published in 1956, was reissued in 1995. A selection of Waugh's letters, edited by Mark Antony, was published in 1980. Here we are again. I have Debbie in the studio and we were reviewing the audiobook of Decline and Fall by Evelyn Waugh. And what a jolly good book it was.
It was very good. And apparently it was his first novel written when he was only 25.
That's quite astounding, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think I've laughed so much in a book, and especially with listening to it with headphones on, randomly laughing in places where people give me very strange looks.
Yeah, it's a light book, it's a short book, but it still has a few things to say, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I really liked it. And just on that point, the narration was by Michael Maloney, who I thought did a wonderful job.
Yes, I mean, he passed away, didn't he, about a year ago. He was an excellent actor and a great choice for reading an audiobook.
And he really brought the characters to life, I thought.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we're not allowed to actually play any clips from Michael Maloney's version, but we have our good friend Rob doing our version, because we weren't allowed by the publisher to use those actual excerpts, so apologies for that.
But Rob has a lovely voice too, doesn't he?
He does indeed. And if you do go to Calibre and download the book or order the book, you will hear the original narration by Michael Maloney, which is well worth listening to. So yes, very funny book, very satirical and very enjoyable. It follows a young man called Paul Pennyfeather. I've written down in my notes here, there were certain parallels with David Nichols, the understudy, and the Steve McQueen character there. And bear with me on this.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think I know where you're going.
He's like a cipher. He doesn't actually say or do much.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so I thought there was similarities there in the fact that, you know, Paul doesn't actually say that much, does he?
No.
And there's a lot of yeses and agreements, and all the characters act around him. So
yes.
I thought that device, again, you know, had been employed by Evelyn Waugh, but to a much more successful outcome, I think, than how David Nichols had done with Steve McQueen. That was my thought going through. Yeah, he's kind of a cipher.
And actually, if you think about Brideshead Revisited, which he wrote later, he takes that and he takes it further, doesn't he? Because
yes.
Charles is very definitely like that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that either. Yes.
And then like Anthony Powell, Dance to the Music of Time, which we couldn't possibly read because there are 12 books, but the character Nick, it's the same. It's just his mad society with everything happening around this person. So yeah, this we could consider this an early experimentation, which really works.
Yeah, it does. I mean, as the quiet observer, you get to see all the characters in their true glory, and there are some very funny, ridiculous characters. But nobody actually does what they're meant to do. There's teachers who don't teach. There's parents who don't parent. And a whole rogues gallery of characters. Let's just take a pause here to have an excerpt from the audiobook when Paul first arrives at the school and meets Mr. Pendergast and Captain Grimes, both of whom become quite influential and really define his time at Clanaber Castle.
"I suppose you're the new master," he said.
"Yes," said Paul. "I'm called Pennyfeather." The little boy gave a shrill laugh.
"I think that's terribly funny," he said, and went away.
Presently the door opened again and two more boys looked in. They stood and giggled for a time and then made off. In the course of the next half hour, six or seven boys appeared on various pretexts and stared at Paul. Then a bell rang and there was a terrific noise of whistling and scampering. The door opened and a very short man of about 30 came into the common room. He had made a great deal of noise in coming because he had an artificial leg. He had a short red moustache and was slightly bald.
"Hello," he said.
"Hello," said Paul.
"I'm Captain Grimes," said the newcomer. "Come in, you," he added to someone outside. Another boy came in. "What do you mean," said Grimes, "by whistling when I told you to stop?"
"Well, everyone else was whistling," said the boy.
"What's that got to do with it?" said Grimes.
"I should think it had a lot to do with it," said the boy.
"Well, just you do 100 lines, and next time, remember, I shall beat you," said Grimes. "With this," said Grimes, waving the walking stick.
"That wouldn't hurt much," said the boy, and went out.
"Oh, there's no discipline in the place," said Grimes, and then he went out too.
"I wonder whether I'm going to enjoy being a schoolmaster," thought Paul. Quite soon another and older man came into the room.
"Hello,"
he said to Paul.
"Hello," said Paul.
"I'm Prendergast," said the newcomer. "Have some port?"
"Thank you, I'd love to."
"Well, there's only one glass."
"Oh, well, it doesn't matter then.
You might get your tooth glass from your bedroom."
"I don't know where that is."
"Oh, well, never mind. We'll have some another night." "I suppose you're the new master."
"Yes."
"You'll hate it here."
"I know. I've been here 10 years. Grimes only came this term. He hates it already.
Have you seen Grimes?"
"Yes, I think so. He isn't a gentleman." "Do you smoke?"
"Yes.
A pipe, I mean."
"Yes."
"Those are my pipes. Remind me to show them to you after dinner." At this moment, the butler appeared with a message that Dr. Fagin wished to see Mr. Pennyfeather.
So Evelyn Waugh himself, what I only found this out recently, was a schoolmaster.
Yes.
For a short period. Yeah. So this is a little autobiographical, isn't it? Because it won't spoil anything to say that Paul starts off as an undergraduate.
At Oxford, yes.
Who is sent down for, now, was it indecent exposure?
It was indecent exposure. He's a victim of a prank, isn't he?
So yeah.
We don't quite know what happens, but he ends up with no trousers on.
Yes, I don't think he exposes more than the middle of his legs, but yeah. There we are. It's a prank. And, you know, I remember at school when the head boy was appointed, every year we would take his trousers off and put them up the flagpole. I mean, I never did it myself, but it was always done. The teachers would watch on and smile. And I didn't even go to private school. So it must be even worse there. Yeah, so these things happen, don't they? And things do seem to happen to poor old Paul. So he's no longer allowed to stay at Oxford.
Yes, he gets sent down.
Sent down is the term.
Phrase, yeah.
And his uncle, now his parents had died.
Yes.
Is that right? So his uncle is his guardian and
that's
he said,
correct.
Basically, I'm not funding you anymore. You need to get a job. So the only thing you can possibly do is teach.
And he ends up, he goes for an interview and he ends up at Clanaber Castle, which is a school, and again, I've written in my notes, it was like the kind of male version of St Trinian's.
Yes.
Just complete chaos and no teaching's going on. The kids are all sort of acting up and...
Oh, yes, they rule the roost, totally.
Absolutely. So he becomes a young master there, where he meets, and again, these are two wonderful characters, Mr Prendergast, who was somewhat of a lay priest.
Exactly. Yeah. He'd been training as a vicar, and then he started having doubts. These doubts plague him for the rest of his life.
Yes.
So at this point, in any case, he's, I think, an ordinary teacher. I don't think it's even religious or theoretical studies. So, yes, he's a sort of fallen angel as well, in a way, isn't he? I mean, all these characters, we should add, they're not really deep, are they? They're more than ciphers.
Yes.
They're sort of caricatures, but it doesn't really matter because of the nature of the book.
They are characters, as you say, and quite kind of huge, grotesque characters in a sense, but very, very funny. And Mr. Prendergast is one of the teachers there, and he's a little bit scared of the boys, I think.
Oh, very scared.
He wears a toupee, which all the boys obviously mock him.
Yeah, and he said something like how he made the wrong decision to wear it, and now he's regretting it, but he can't go back on it.
Let's go to the audio book and have an excerpt from the man himself, Mr. Prendergast, as he explains about his wig.
Ah, you're lucky. I find all boys utterly intractable. I don't know why it is. Of course, my wig has a lot to do with it. Have you noticed that I wear a wig? Oh, no, no, of course not. Well, the boys did as soon as they saw it. It was a great mistake my ever getting one. I thought when I left Worthing that I looked too old to get a job easily. I was only 41. It was very expensive, even though I chose the cheapest quality. Perhaps that's why it looks so like a wig. I don't know. I knew from the first it was a mistake, but once they'd seen it, it was too late to go back. They make all sorts of jokes about it. Well, I expect they'd laugh at something else if it wasn't that. Yes, no doubt they would. I dare say it's a good thing to localise their ridicule as far as possible. Oh dear, oh dear. It wasn't for my pipes. I don't know how I should manage to keep on. What made you come here?
Well, I was sent down from Scone for indecent behaviour.
Oh, yes, like Grimes.
No, said poor family, not like Grimes.
Captain Grimes, who is a complete cad.
Yes, he's a terrible man.
A terrible, awful man who seems to spend his whole time boozing and womanising and a complete scoundrel. And is running away from several different parties. There's an ex-wife and there's police after him and all sorts of things going
on. Is he a bigamist?
He is the bigamist in this, and he marries the headmaster's daughter. So there's this merry troop of awful schoolmasters, none of which are doing their jobs properly. And then they have a school sports day, which just turns out to be the most hilarious thing. And they don't seem to have any hurdles and they don't remember where any of the equipment is stored. And of course, the only reason the school is having the sports day is to raise money. And the head is hoping that two of his pupils' parents will attend so he can tap them up for funds. Here's the headmaster, Dr. Fagan, talking to Paul about other events he's organised that haven't gone quite to plan.
During the 14 years that I've been at Llanaber, there have been 6 sports days and 2 concerts, all of them in one way or another utterly disastrous. Once Lady Bunyan was taken ill. Another time it was the matter of the press photographers and the obstacle race. Another time some quite unimportant parents brought a dog with them which bit 2 of the boys very severely and 1 of the masters who swore terribly in front of everyone. I could hardly blame him, but of course he had to go. Then there was the concert when the boys refused to sing God Save the King because of the pudding they'd had for luncheon. One way and another I've been consistently unfortunate in my efforts at festivity, and yet I look forward to each new fiasco with the utmost relish.
I think it's fair to say there is a section in this sports day which is written with language of its time.
Completely, yes. And not language we would use currently.
I know some publishers are now taking out
references,
language like that.
Yes.
Yes, I mean, I know in Agatha Christie's, which I'm not 100% behind, because I feel we should be learning from prejudices gone by, you know, learning from the mistakes we've made.
Yes.
And we should feel embarrassed that people used to say these things.
Yeah.
Just celebrate the fact we're moving on. But yeah, I found that quite an uncomfortable passage. I really like the organ lesson story. So I found out that when War was a teacher, I mean, obviously Paul is very out of his depth because he's suddenly been thrown into not this just this strange school, but teaching. He has no idea how to teach. Mm-mm. No idea at all. And particularly, not being a musical person, he has no idea how to teach someone the organ. And ends up having to teach the organ to someone who is already quite good at it. And apparently that really happened to Evelyn Waugh.
Really? Yeah. And I think it's Lord Tangent, isn't it? That young Lord Tangent?
Yes, Tangent. I love these names.
The names are ludicrous. Although it's set in 1920s, I mean, there was some criticism that it might have aged a bit and that the satire is not quite as biting as it would be then. But I didn't find that at all.
No, people are still people, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah. And I felt it had a timeless quality about it. Human frailties and faults are universal and they still exist today. Mm. We still have awful teachers and we still have cads and we still have, you know, awful parents. So those traits I found were very good. All the more funny for him and the situations he puts them in.
Yes. And we can't give away too much of the plot, but it is worth saying that he draws a hilarious parallel between the British public school system and the British prison system.
And there was a slight mockery of the reforms that were... I feel that Waugh was quite critical of that.
I love the way that the governor thought it would be good to give an ex-carpenter some tools so that he could feel useful. And let's say that these tools were then used inappropriately.
Yes.
Yes, it was so funny.
Yeah, everything they tried to do sort of backfired, really. So, Debbie, I think we enjoyed this novel much more than our last.
Yes, very novel. Much so. And pure joy, pure joy.
So our three reasons for listening to this audiobook, what would you say?
I mean, the main reason is, Marley, it is one of the funniest books I have ever read.
I'd agree with that.
It's just witty. It's really, really witty. Secondly, I think it paints a wonderful picture. I can imagine everything. You know, the theatre maker in me, I see this in front of me so easily. And thirdly, it's a short novel. I mean, in a way, that's a disadvantage because it's all over so quickly. But if you're wanting something that will keep you amused and isn't completely vacuous, then I think this is a superb choice.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. As I said in the beginning, it really did make me laugh out loud. The scenarios, the language. And I think that's where Waugh was really clever because it's quite a lot of what he doesn't say.
Yes.
In the language. And you're kind of like, then your imagination goes. Yeah. And you can see the funny part, the ludicrous situations that the characters get put in. It's so well written.
It is. And as I say, he was 25. This is the beginning of it. He's one of my favourite authors. You can see how this is the beginning of his career. I'm such a good wordsmith, really.
And he has this ability to stand back from society and just observe.
Yes, he does.
Fantastic advantage to have as a novelist. And you could see how he went from this novel to Brideshead. So I really enjoyed that. Tremendously funny, very, very witty. And he kind of takes you out of like what's going on in the world. It's a world that we don't necessarily know anymore, but it's
well, I mean, there's a lot of prison reform going on at the moment, isn't there? So it does draw parallels.
With the press. And there's still public schools around and there's still Oxbridge. So I guess
there is an element of escapism, certainly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's still relevant.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think completely relevant. Those characters still are around today. I mean, obviously, they are taken to an extreme in the novel, but it is so funny. Definitely worth, if you can and have the time, to download it or order it from Calibre, I definitely would. It's a great listen.
Yes, and it's about 6 hours long, isn't it?
Yeah. It won't take up too much of your time. And as Debbie says, I preferred it was 12 hours long. It just made me laugh so much.
Yeah.
And with that, thank you so much, Debbie.
Not at all. It was an absolute joy. Thank you. If any of the listeners would like to recommend books for you and I to read, that they should do so. How would they go about doing that?
As Debbie mentioned, if you would like to request an audiobook for us to review, please insert the title into your wallet if you receive USB keys or send an email request to info@sadtn.org.uk. We are in the process of getting a new telephone number for the organisation and I will let you know once that's been established. In the meantime, many thanks.